Will everybody in Boston please just shut up? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Wednesday, February 19th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on Twitter as well. You can obviously find, you can find a lot of our written work on Sports Illustrated, a lot of work covering the New York Mets for them and the freelance capacity, and firstpitchpodcast.com to just get every episode of this podcast in your feeds every single morning. We're going to keep on with our previews. We're going to talk about the Seattle Mariners today. We're going to talk about Justin Turner joining the Cubs. We're going to talk about Wilson Contreras moving to first base and the physical work he did to prep for that. We're going to talk about Joe Buck. But first, what is going on in Boston? Oh, my God. Okay, so to recap, everybody, we talked about this. We talked about Raffy Devers not wanting to move off of third base in that disaster of a press conference. But there's more. Tristan Casas, the incumbent first baseman, met with the media and had very explicit comments and opinions about the same thing. Let me read you some quotes here. Quote, it's Raffy Devers' position. He's the third baseman. And at that point, that's where it stands. And he's done it for a really long time now when he's only getting better at the position. Doubt. His defense is getting better every single year. No, it's not. We don't know what the future holds, but we know it holds Raffy Devers. He's got to play defense. It's going to keep him athletic, and he's going to hit. And because of him being at third base, he doesn't know any other position, and he doesn't want to play any other positions, and he's going to fight for it, even if it's with any of the younger guys, any new guy. I think he's the best third baseman in the league. I wouldn't take anybody over him. I think he should play third base. What is Tristan Casas thinking? Either by jumping into this in the first place or by saying he thinks Raffy's the best third baseman in the league. Like, I understand you got to stick up for your teammate. There's ways to do it without saying he's the best third baseman in the league.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. And yeah, I do think that a lot of it was he feels like he was sticking up for his teammate, but at the same time, the guy that he's really sticking up for his teammate against is another one of his teammates, Alex Bregman. So it's
not like somebody asked, hey, if we do this thing, do you think Raffy should have to move? It's, hey, this is our new guy in your clubhouse whose locker is like four down from yours. Do us a favor and talk shit about that guy. What are you doing, man? Shut up, people.
There's something in the water up there in Boston or something, because I don't get it, man.
They're down in Fort Myers, so.
Yeah, there's definitely something in the water in Florida, but it doesn't make any sense. And Raffy Devers may be one of the best third basemen offensively in baseball, but as an all-around player at third base, he is far from that, because we've talked about it since his debut. Is legitimately the worst defensive third baseman in the sport since he debuted in 2017. And guys like Matt Chapman, Austin Riley exist. And it's just Nolan Arenado. There are just so many other third basemen that are all around better than Raffy Devers. And that's just an asinine statement to make. It just doesn't make any sense, man. I don't get it. I agree with you. Everybody, will the real Boston Red Sox please shut up?
Yeah, now there is a little bit of like self-preservation here, obviously. I mean, if Devers moves to first base, Casas has to move to either DH or come out of the lineup. So a little bit of that is self-preservation, I'm sure. But still, like I mentioned this yesterday, everybody has handled this wrong. The best way to do this is just to be like, we're going to do whatever we have to do to help the team win. Our goal is to win a World Series, blah, blah, blah. Don't get into the details here. Now, to his credit, Alex Bregman was also asked about the media, or was also asked by the media about what's going on, his thoughts on this whole situation. And he actually had the right thing to say. It's athlete speak, But that's an improvement over what everybody else has done to this point. He was manager Alex Cora hosted a team dinner at his house. Apparently, Bregman and Raffy spoke for about 45 minutes. And he was asked about what it was like in the clubhouse, what it was like at the dinner and things like that. And he said, we've been having a lot of fun. We've been taking ground balls back here during our work together, talking about winning, talking about baseball, talking about being excited for the season. We all got together and had dinner last night. It's great. And then when they asked him specifically about, like, is he willing to move to second in deference to Devers, he said, I'm super excited to just be his teammate. He's a great player. I think everybody in the clubhouse is worried about winning and whatever it takes to help the team win. That's all I'm focused on. I'll play wherever AC tells me to play. That is what you're supposed to do. Not all of this nonsense that everybody else did for the last couple days. And they specifically, like, they kept going in on Bregman, asking him, trying to get more inflammatory quotes like they got out of Devers, like they got out of Cassis. And they asked specifically about, like, what Devers said to the media. And Bregman, again, handled this really well. I think everybody here believes in their abilities. I think all of us believe that if we all put together a good effort this season, we have a really good chance of being a winning baseball team. I can only talk for myself. I'll play wherever it helps the team win. That's all any of you had to say. This whole thing could have been handled behind closed doors, you dummies. And that is why the Red Sox needed to sign Alex Bregman, because apparently nobody else in the clubhouse is enough of a leader to understand how to approach this situation. You resolve this disagreement, this difference in opinion internally, not litigate it through the media.
Oh yeah,
and Alex Cora is part of that too. Alex Cora is part of that too. Cassis specifically said, "I think Bregman should play second." That's a quote I just read right there. No, the guys will play wherever they need to play so that we can win. We just all want to win. That's what Cassis should have said. No, this should have never been this big of a story.
Oh, right. 100%. And I did think about that yesterday late in the show when we were talking about the Athletics, about how this is a huge thing that has kind of been brewing in Boston really since they traded Mookie Betts. They haven't had a real veteran leader in that clubhouse since they traded Mookie Betts. And so they've got all these young guys like Rafael Devers, Jaron Duran, Tristan Casas, and they haven't been there the entire time as Rafael Devers, of course. But Devers has been there since 2019. He's essentially the leader of the clubhouse, and he was in his early 20s. I mean, that's not a great way to brew a good team mentality with somebody in their early 20s making multi-hundred millions of dollars trying to be the leader of a clubhouse and brew a good mentality in that organization. And it's an issue of the Red Sox's own doing from back then and even now, bringing in Alex Bregman into the fold with just an already crazy infield situation, just making it even crazier. And that's not even to mention that they have two more infielders in AAA that are knocking on the door.
It really feels like when there's an injury, right? Like, somebody's going to get injured. This is all going to resolve itself. And it could be as soon as, like, the season starts. It could be next week. It could be in May. But it feels like this is all going to not be an issue once they get on the field and somebody ends up tweaking an ankle, pulling a hamstring or something, and that's all handled. But it's just, they handled this so poorly. I hate we had to leave the show off two straight days with this nonsense. But we'll be watching where guys play when they actually get on the field for their games. I think they start this weekend or maybe early next week. We'll see what happens. More guys joining teams. Justin Turner, 40-year-old Justin Turner, 1 year, $6 million deal with the Chicago Cubs, part of their fallback plan for not getting Alex Bregman. $2.5 million in incentives, not confirmed by the club because he's still putting in the physical, but this is something where he's played first base the last couple years. You have to imagine, you know, being a righty, he can fit in with the lefty Michael Bush at first. They didn't really have a backup there. They talked about using John Birdie a little bit there because John Birdie is a utility guy, but he did it a little bit in New York with the Yankees. And then he played third base for a long time. He's not going to be an option to start at third base, not at the age of 40, but they've got rookie Matt Shaw in the running for that. Now they can have Birdie and Turner as kind of like emergency options, safety nets. And then Shaw can probably learn quite a bit from Turner, a guy who played third base for a long time in the majors. Is this honestly probably end up being a better deal for them than getting Bregman simply because of the money that would have been involved for Bregman versus Turner and losing a draft pick to get Turner, or I'm sorry, to get Bregman? Or is this just you're counting on the rookie to make it, but you have an emergency option if you need it?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I do like this. I like Justin Turner to the Cubs. I think he's a good fit there. It's good veteran presence in that lineup because a lot of their players are pretty young. And, you know, you've got Matt Shaw, a third baseman, knocking on the door, ready to take that next step of the majors. And like you said, Justin Turner can teach him how to be a good third baseman. And I think that they had a good deal of missing out on Alex Bregman and paying Justin Turner a lot less and having him for a lot shorter, so he's not blocking Matt Shaw. If they would have got Alex Bregman, Alex Bregman would have blocked Matt Shaw. And he's
possibly for multiple years. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I like this deal. I like Justin Turner to the Cubs.
The thing for me, the Cubs were never going to get Bregman. Like, they were like fourth on the offer that they gave. And apparently one of the quotes or a source or whatever, one of the reports that came out was that they went like financially as far as they could go and they finished like fourth. We talked about the Red Sox acting like a poverty program when they're really not. The Cubs, I think, are the biggest example of acting like they're broke boys when they should be one of the highest payrolls in baseball. Like, I don't understand why the Chicago Cubs can't run a payroll. Like, they're deathly afraid of the luxury tax. They frequently end up as like the third or fourth suitor when they try to sign some of these guys. And like, I honestly don't see any way that Kyle Tucker re-signs there because they're probably going to come in fifth in the bidding. They'll get a draft pick after he turns out a qualifying offer, but that's about it. It's just wild to me.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. Their payroll is, it's even after all they've done this offseason, their payroll is still under $200 million for 2025. And it's they're one of the, their owners are rich and they have some of the highest attendance in baseball every year because it's Wrigley Field, because it's the Chicago Cubs. And it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
I don't think people understand how rich the Ricketts are. Joe Ricketts, he's the son of the founder of TD Ameritrade. He is worth $4.1 billion by himself. The family is worth like $6 or $7 billion. Like, they're legit on the billionaires list from Forbes. Like, they have so much money, and yet they just act like this program's broke. There's a quote from Tom Ricketts that came out yesterday, actually. He was talking about the fans wanting the Cubs to spend more. Here we go. Quote, "They think somehow we have all these dollars that the Dodgers have or the Mets have or the Yankees have, and we just keep it, which isn't true at all. What happens is we try to break even every year, and that's about it." If I was a fan of the Chicago Cubs, I would be pissed by that comment. There is no reason to act as broke as they do when your family is worth billions of dollars. If the Cubs ran a deficit of $50 million in a season, that is a rounding error on the family's balance sheet.
Yeah, it's
I just
it's
saw crazy. That quote and I just had to pass it along.
Oh yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's crazy, man. They apparently they haven't been listening to Dave Ramsey because one of his basic rules is you got to give a good portion of your net worth, and they don't do that. So they should be tuning into the Ramsey show a little more often.
There you go. Talking about the Cubs being broke boys, a guy that left and signed somewhere else, Wilson Contreras, the brother of Brewers catcher William Contreras, the older brother. He's 32. He has reported to Cardinals camp and he has put on weight. He's put on 12 pounds of muscle, so he's listed at 247 now that he's moving from catcher to first base. He got there early to like do work on these drills. He's played first base before. He has 11 games in the majors at first. The earliest were 2019, back when he was with the Cubs. So I want to say this is his third year of a five-year, $87.5 million deal. Do you think that Wilson Contreras as a first baseman is going to work out better for the Cardinals than Wilson Contreras, the catcher, did?
Yeah, I think so. Because it'll keep him on the field a lot longer. He's had injury issues throughout his career, and a lot of that stems from being a catcher. And
Directly related to the catching. Yeah, he was set up too close and got hit by a bat in a swing.
Yeah,
last year. Yeah,
yeah. And so I think that keeping him on the field, because he's good offensively, and I think that will also help his offensive numbers, because his legs aren't going to be as tired from crouching for nine innings plus a day. And so I do like the move of him to first base, and I think it's going to be beneficial for both parties in the long run.
Can we talk about just like the physical frames of some guys? Because there's a funny article from the beat writer for the Guardians on MLB.com talking about how he's at Guardians camp, he's like, you can definitely see a type, because the pitchers, 6'5", 6'6", they're all massive people that have massive fastballs and things like that. And then when you get to the position player side, 5'9", 5'10", 5'11". And He described it as overpowering stuff thrown by overpowering people on the pitcher side and contact-prone swatters on the position player side. This is like, it's just, you just never really think about these organizational preferences and things like that. But that's just kind of funny to me. I saw that. I wanted to share it. That's all I really had here. I just thought it was funny that all of their pitchers are massive and all of their hitters are not, because like the Braves are the opposite. Like Spencer Strider is 6 foot tall. He's listed at 6 foot. I'm not even sure. You know, guys like things like that, but then Matt Olson's like 6'4". Like the hitters are massive people, and the pitchers are like, they're okay with a little bit of a shorter guy. Some of their draft picks they just made were like 5'10", 5'11", 6 foot. And I'm like, just kind of funny to see how this all works out.
Yeah, it is crazy to think about. And with that being the case, you know, I'd kind of like to see Aaron Judge step on the mound, see what kind of fastball he's got at 6'7".
There you go. Ooh, the very bottom of the article. Here's a great dumb stat that only baseball can do. The Guardians were the only team in MLB last year to have three players who qualified for the batting title and had a league average OPS plus while being listed under 6 foot tall. Dude, what a stat. What a weird stat. Jose Ramirez, Stephen Kwan, Josh Naylor was the third. He's 5'11". They traded him to Arizona, signed Carlos Santana, who's 5'11". So it's just kind of hilarious to me.
Guardians have a type.
Guardians have a type. There you go. Thoughts on Joe Buck coming back to call his first national telecast for MLB since 2021 on opening day. It's going to be Brewers versus Yankees on ESPN. He's going to be joined by Joe Girardi as an analyst, former Yankees manager, and Bill Schroeder, lead color analyst for the Brewers, a dude who is on the list of like most underappreciated broadcasters in baseball. Thoughts on Joe Buck coming back for a game?
Yeah, well, Joe Buck is a pretty divisive commentator. There are, of course, a bunch of people who don't like him, and then there are a bunch of people that do like him. And I'm kind of closer to the don't like Joe Buck than I am the do like Joe Buck, just because, I don't know, it's just, I don't know what it is. It's just Joe Buck has this thing about him, and I don't like him.
I can acknowledge that when I was younger, I didn't like him because everybody didn't like him, right? And as I got to watch more of Joe Buck, I started to really appreciate Joe Buck as a broadcaster, as an announcer for baseball. And so, like, I'm totally eating crow. When I was younger, I'd be like, yeah, I don't like Joe Buck. Joe Buck's awful. He's really not. There was this cultural thing for a couple of years where it was cool to hate on Joe Buck. And I bought right into it. And then as I watched more Joe Buck, I'm like, no. Joe Buck's actually pretty, pretty decent. He left MLB broadcasting in 22 when he went to join ESPN and Monday Night Football. So that's why he hadn't been on there. This is just a one-off thing. He's already said it's a one-time thing. It's not a permanent return to the booth. But I'm just kind of hyped. I think it's going to be great, and I'm just excited that we can kind of get Joe Buck back again now that I'm at the point of, like, appreciating. Yeah, no, I've heard some pretty awful – honestly, I'd rather have Joe Buck than anybody who's currently on Sunday Night Baseball. So this makes perfect sense to me.
No, I definitely agree with you there. There are definitely worse commentators, especially in baseball, and especially some regional guys that and team-specific guys that are pretty bad. But I will say I have listened to some Joe Buck interviews on podcasts and stuff, and I like Joe Buck the person. I've just
yeah.
But maybe when I get up to your age, Lindsay, I might like you better as a commentator.
Yep, I'm old. That's fine. Thank you for that. All right. Let's get to the Seattle Mariners, because I think we're pretty both in agreement that this team is going to finish third place in the American League West. The 54 percenters, if you will. For the record, I understood what Jerry DePoto was trying to say. He just said it the wrong way. I think I've made this point in the show before, right? Like, if you can consistently have a winning percentage of 540 or better, you're going to consistently be in the hunt for a playoff spot. And when you get in the playoffs, anything could happen. Like, that's the point he was trying to make. But he said the goal is to win 54% of our games. And that rubbed fans the wrong way. But in reality, the concept is right. Going, having a winning percentage of 540 puts you in the playoff hunt just about every single season. So this is a team that has really, I believe, not added. I want to say they've added one major league guaranteed contract this offseason, and it's a backup infielder and Donovan Solano in the infield. They signed him in January. But outside of that, the lineup, how do we feel about this lineup? The outfield, left to right, Randy Arozarena, who they got via trade from Tampa Bay last year. Frequent trade partner of theirs, by the way. They do a lot of stuff. Luke Raley is going to be at first base. They also got him in January of last year from Tampa Bay. Randy Arozarena in left. Julio Rodriguez in center. Victor Robles in right. I still think that's a terrible, terrible idea, but whatever. As of right now, Fangraphs has Jorge Polanco at third. JP Crawford at short. Dylan Moore at second. I think Ryan Bliss might be better there. And Luke Raley at first. With Cal Raleigh, big dumper behind the plate, and Mitch Haniger is the DH. How do we feel about this lineup as of now?
I think that out of all of the quote-unquote playoff contenders, this is probably the worst lineup out of all of them, because it's pretty bad. I mean, you've got Victor Robles, who had a good year in 2024 leading off. And
change of scenery guy and immediately sign an extension. Good for you, buddy. Get your money. Is he going to live up to it again? I don't know.
Exactly. Julio Rodriguez, I am nowhere near as high on him as probably anyone else in that follows baseball, because he has consistently regressed year over year offensively since he debuted. Randy Arozarena, again, I am nowhere near as high on him as probably anyone else in baseball. He's exciting to watch and he's entertaining to watch, but that does not always mean good. it's like that meme where it's like, which player has this level of popularity but this level of skill? And it's Randy Arozarena every time.
Right.
But the lineup as a whole, I mean, their best hitter is probably their catcher, Cal Raleigh. So it's not a good lineup, especially when you want them to contend for a playoff position.
To your note on Julio, OPS plus for his 3 years in the majors, 147, 130, 116. If I remember right, last year was one of those like dramatically different first half versus second half kind of things. He hit 267 in the first half with a 690 OPS. He hit 285 in the second half with an 818 OPS. And it's his giant extension that he signed adds different escalators and things where he can make a ton of money if he plays like an MVP. And I think that's probably the most team-friendly mega extension that we've seen, because it's not like he's going to make a lot of money, but a lot of that stuff in the back end, like the salary all the way through 2029, doesn't exceed like $20.2 million. And then a lot of that stuff in the back end is contingent on his performance. And I think that's probably the ended up being the safest way you could have given this extension and could work out in the team's favor if he just never gets back to that rookie of the year thing. He is also only 24. So,
yeah.
Plenty of time, obviously. The infield kind of feels like it's an issue. Dylan Moore, Jorge Polanco at second and third. No, I don't have confidence in either one of them to be anything better than, at best, slightly below average. Your bench, you know, Leo Rivas, Donovan Solano, Dominic Canzone, none of these guys are super inspiring. In the minors, you've got Ryan Bliss, who I said I think Schrabi should be the starting second baseman. There's just not a ton of other – Miles Mastroboni. You know, Brandon Godden of the Braves is sad that Mastroboni is no longer going to be coming through Atlanta. But, like, there's a ton of great pieces in the farm system, right? Cole Young, Colt Emerson, Ty Pete. Really, it just, you know, Michael Arroyo, Lazaro Montes, tons of great names in the farm system. But none of those guys are going to impact the team this year. And it just feels like this team needed to do more from an offensive perspective, especially in that ballpark, which suppresses offense, and they just didn't. And so you're just banking on another year of this absurdly amazing rotation keeping you competitive because you don't necessarily have the offense to reliably win games. It's just weird to me.
Yeah, I don't get it either. They definitely needed to do a lot more than they did when, like you said already, all they did was add Donovan Solano, who was going to be a bench bat. So it's crazy. It doesn't make any sense.
But can we talk about the rotation, though? Because holy cow.
Yeah.
This is a rotation. Four dudes qualified for the ERA title. Logan Gilbert threw 200 and four guys made 30 starts. Logan Gilbert had 208 and two-thirds innings. Luis Castillo had 175. He's the old man. He's the only one over the age of 30. George Kirby had 191 innings. Bryce Miller had 180 innings. And then Brian Wu threw in 120 for good measure on 20-something starts. Like, they don't have their depth starters is like Emerson Hancock and a bunch of NRIs. But, like, with these five, you're in any series that you play. You're comfortable with almost any combination of these guys in a playoff series. I just don't know if you have enough offense to make it matter.
Yeah, for sure. Whereas I said the lineup is probably the worst out of all the playoff contending teams, this rotation is one of the best out of all the playoff contending teams. It's insane how good they are. Even the Fangraphs thing we look at whenever we do these previews, their power rankings, their lowest guy is Brian Wu at 62nd, and I think that's too low because
62nd at his position. Yeah, everybody else.
Yeah,
Logan Gilbert, the fourth best starter in baseball according to this. George Kirby, 18th best. Brian Miller, 16th best. Luis Castillo, yeah. 30th best. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely wild here. They're all homegrown guys, too, with the exception of Castillo. That was the trade. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the bullpen. Matt Brash, him of the super just frisbee UFO slider. Coming back from Tommy John, I've already seen some videos of him throwing a little bit in camp. Jackson Kowar, who they acquired via trade from the Braves. Fun fact, that was the Jared Kelnick trade. The two guys they got, Jackson Kowar and Cole Phillips, the prospect, neither one of them have pitched for Seattle because both of them had Tommy John after the trade.
Wow.
Just fun fact there. So, like, Andre Munoz, really good reliever, 20-something saves last year. This team seems to be able to build relievers out of spare parts. I do think, like, if you notice, a lot of the trades that Seattle ends up making, they're shipping out relievers that they – made. Like, they just created these these dudes some sort of outlier pitch. The best ones, like a Matt Brash, stay with them. The rest of them, they can just move them on. And Matt Brash was a trade acquisition back in like 2020. But the bullpen as a whole, I don't really, it's fine. Like, I don't mind Colin Snyder as a setup man, but I do think they need Matt Brash to come back. They probably need Jackson Kowar to come back. And now that I've said that, two random dudes you've never heard of are going to put ERAs up of 2.25 with like 12 strikeouts per 9 this year for the Mariners.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, the bullpen is definitely not nowhere near the level of the starting rotation. But I also wouldn't say it's at the level of the lineup. I think the bullpen is probably in the middle of those two, somewhere in the middle. But it's not a great bullpen, but I think it can get it done, especially because their starting pitching is going to take a whole lot of the workload from the bullpen, and we're going to see 6-7 innings a day from their starting pitchers.
Sleeper to watch here from that pen, to emerge in that pen, Shintaro Fujinami. It's the flame-throwing Japanese starter that was signed by the Athletics. He was awful. They cut him. He went to Baltimore. Wasn't that great there. Went to the Mets. Wasn't that great there. Signed as a free agent. He's in camp as an NRI. He's just now 30. He turns 31 this year. But dude can throw 100. And if anybody can convert a pitcher with some good stuff into a great reliever, it's going to be the Mariners. I've been asking the Atlanta Braves to sign this dude for like a year now. So just heads up on that. He might be one of those dudes. I'm going to say probably him and Will Klein are the two guys that just pop out of this pen and just become like, Maybe Hagen Danner, they got on waivers, I think, from Toronto. Like, those are might be some of the guys that just explode out of this pen. But ultimately, I still think they're going to finish third. They'll be lucky to win 54% of their games because of this offense and just how there's really not anybody reliable other than Big Dumper in this entire offense.
Yeah, 100%. It's all going to come down to the offense. They may be able to hold their opponents to 3 runs or less a game, or 4 runs or less a game at worst, but their offense isn't going to be able to score that much, anywhere near that much this season.
Okay, so we have them in third place. They finished in second last year. We still have them in third because we have the Rangers coming back up and passing them.
Yep.
Yep. All right, there we go. If you have a different idea, let us know. I'm on Twitter at Krause Baseball. Troy's on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. Several of you reached out about the striking out the side thing. A lot of you agreed with me. It's got to be all three guys. But when we did search it for it, on Google, one of the first things that popped up is there is disagreement about what the definition is of striking out the side. You can also, if you're on YouTube, subscribe to the YouTube channel, leave a 5-star review, leave your comment down below for us so that we know what's going on. Either way, send all your friends to firstpitchpodcast.com to get more MLB daily recaps from the two of us. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.